Hey guys, welcome to my podcast channel, How Could You Do? Today I'm very, very happy to have a good friend of mine, Radish. So today we're going to be talking about, long distance hiking, trekking, and, the things we love the most, the two of us. So I'm going to let Radish introduce himself.
Yeah, Juju, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Something that you might not know is I think the first time I met you, I was coming down from the Sierras from like Mount Whitney, and you and Gator were sitting at some campsite. And that was like the first, that was kind of like the beginning of our kind of on and off tramily that like existed for a few weeks, but that's the only tramily that I've ever been a part of, and I had a really good time. And I think we both shared that we really enjoyed hiking with each other, and would love to do it again sometime. So I'm honored and excited to be on the pod.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I remember that time, and you were like we were talking with I forgot her name. God,
Tang.
Tang, yes, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're talking with Tang, and you were basically passing by, and she said like, "Oh, you're gonna stop. I'm gonna stop with these guys, and maybe we're gonna just camp at the same spot." And you were kind of, "Yeah, I was planning on doing maybe an extra 5 miles or something."
Yeah, I think it was another three or something. Yeah,
three miles. And then so you started to go away from us, and then you turned back and you came back and say like, what is doing? Like, you know, so that was pretty funny. And I think that was the very last month. I think we were like past September or something.
Yeah, because we hadn't gotten to Kennedy Meadows yet because we were there together. But we had come down from the High Sierra. I think it was just a few miles south of Whitney Portal is my guess. But yeah, that was funny. I had slept alone so many nights on the PCT. It was like, wait, there are some people that are actually here. Like I should hang out and chat with them.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And I was very glad, like, you stopped and we had a lot of fun together. And we started to be kind of, just catching up with each other and having sometimes the same pace or kind of. So that was pretty funny. And yeah, great, great memories. I wish I started like a little bit later on the PCT and I was having the chance maybe to hike, through Oregon with you or some kind of things, right? But that's going to be for another hike anyway.
Yeah,
right?
That sounds good.
All right. So can you tell us about like where you live, how old are you? These kind of things, like I'm sure like people are going to have a better understanding of who you are.
The basic intro. Yeah. So my name's Relish. I live in San Francisco. I'm 25. My first thru hike was in 2017. I did the Ouachita Trail, which is 220 miles in the Ouachita Mountains in Oklahoma and Arkansas. It was right after graduation. And in college, I like binge watched John Z and Nemor and the big like YouTube ultralighters. And I so badly wanted to be a thru hiker. I just wanted the title of a thru hiker. So before my first job started, I like 3 weeks out of college, and it was like the only trail. I like Google all of the long trails in the States, and it was like the only trail that I could hike end to end that was kind of the right length and had just logistically was available to me. So I drove 15 hours to Little Rock, Arkansas, and caught a hitch to the other side of this trail and hiked it. And I think it took me like 10 or 11 days. So that was 2017, the Ouachita Trail, which like is not very well known. And then in 2019, I did the Tahoe Rim Trail and the Wonderland Trail in prep for the PCT. And then I through hiked the PCT southbound in 2018. And then didn't do anything in 2019. And then in 2020, I'm hoping to do the Pacific Northwest Trail. And the Great Divide Trail together is like a combined through hike. We'll see how that pans out with COVID-19 currently still expanding, which is a major bummer. And then I'm also hoping to do the Sierra High Route, the South Sierra High Route, and the lowest to highest trail, the lowest to highest route later in the summer as well. So I'm hoping it's a summer pack of hiking, but everything's up in the air right now. So that's kind of my shtick.
All right, cool. Well, so you can see people like we have an experienced hiker on the podcast today. And again, I'm very, very happy. You said yes to the invitation, and that was good. And when I started this kind of podcast, I was always thinking about you. And I think we had a good match on the trail, and we were quite having the same approach of through hiking and the way we were seeing, you know, how to go for long distance hiking trails and stuff like that. So yeah, very happy to have you today, and you can share your experience and what you've been doing good and not. And that's going to be a good podcast. So thank you. So can you tell us like a little bit, like how do you train yourself, like mentally, body, you know, like mentally, can you just explain and take us through the, you know, like some of the trainings you do before the going on the long distance hike?
Yeah, totally. So I think there's a lot of components to preparing for a long distance through hike. So I'll try and remember all of them, but if there's any I forget, please bring us back and I'll be sure to comment on that particular element of prep. So obviously physical is the most obvious part of preparation. And really, I don't do a ton. I try to do as much backpacking as possible in preparation for backpacking, which is generic advice, but really what I do. So I try and do a lot of shakedown hikes that'll be 2 to 4 days long in preparation for getting ready. And a shakedown hike, for those who don't know, is like taking all of your gear out that you'd like to take on a long trail, taking it out for 2 or 3 days, and testing it all out and seeing what works and doesn't work. So that kind of hits two birds with one stone, where you're doing the physical conditioning, but you're also trying out all your gear. And I try to be really attentive to my gear, and I keep a note in my phone about every tiny little thing that bothers me. So something as small as like, hey, keeping my phone in this shoulder strap pocket means that I have to do, you know, take this hand, so I have to put my trekking poles in this hand, or, you know, keeping my water bottles on my right hand side of my backpack is useful, is because I'm like can reach farther back there, or like I need a night mask. I actually carry with me a super duper cheap, I got it on an airplane, an international flight a long time ago, one of those little sleeping masks, and I'm a really sensitive sleeper, but I often cowboy camp, so I'll like carry that. But so I take tons of notes on whatever the slightest annoyances or inconveniences or things that go well, and then post my shakedown, like I'll go through each one and be like, okay, what's a way to optimize that or remedy that particular annoyance? So back to physical training, like I try and stay in general physical shape. I climb, I hike, and I just try and be in decent shape, but there's no really particular regimen for physical prep. I just try and hike a lot, and that's what I did on the PCT. I had already put in like 500 miles that summer before even hitting the PCT, so I was in pretty good shape. In terms of mental, which I think, you know, like you hit on, it is definitely a big part of it. I try and have a strong routine of meditation, specifically because something that I feel can really reduce the quality of a hike is becoming really frustrated at moments when the trail just isn't going the way you want. So if a climb is a little bit steeper than you might have thought, or a little bit longer, or it's drizzling and you're cold, or, you know, whatever inconveniences are happening, to amplify those in your mind, to dwell on them, really just can destroy, in my experience, really ruin a hike. Whereas if I can take those difficulties in stride and manage them in my mind, that really improves the quality. And if I can remind myself that, hey, the hardship is part of the reason that I'm out here, and it's part of what brings joy and achievement at the end of it. If I can remind myself of those things over the course of a hike, I can have a lot more enjoyable hike. So I try in preparation for a hike to be mentally prepared. So do a lot of meditation. And I also find that meditation helps with the sudden departure from spending a lot of time on screens. When I'm on trail, I don't watch anything or spend a lot of time on my phone, which is definitely There's a large distance between that and my regular life. And I find that meditation also helps me kind of reduce that monkey mind or that need to constantly be jumping from small dopamine hit to small dopamine hit of social media and things like that. And that's really good for a trail when you kind of go on a real intense diet from those things. So I find that's super helpful. So that's kind of my mental prep. And then did you want me to dive into talking about food or
I mean, like maybe we can add something on the mental preparation is also like the meditation maybe helps you like when you go through, you know, like some tough times and you can recover more quickly. The recovery, because it's very demanding for your body. It's just to like, I don't know, like 25, 30 miles a day, every day for pretty much 4 months.
Yeah.
So maybe the recovery, because the body has a memory, right? And maybe the meditation can connect your body and your mind in the way. I don't know if you can talk about some meditation. I haven't done many meditation, but what do you think for recovery?
Well, I think what it helps me do is keeps my emotions in check and make sure they don't kind of run off the rails. So if I'm like rain is something that bothers me. Long-term rain where if it's a few hours of rain, that's fine. But rain where your gear starts to get wet and it starts to become really crummy and miserable. And if you get that for a few days, I'm easily frustrated by that. But there's a place in between a mental place in between the stimulus of the rain, of the being wet, and the emotional response of screaming your curse words into the void of the wilderness. There's a place in between there where I have some agency to not respond in a really visceral, angry way, but instead I can accept that. So the more I meditate, I find that the better I am at pulling the brakes on that emotional train before it runs off the rails. Because once it gets going, once it picks up steam, and once I kind of find myself in a sort of temper tantrum at the trail or at Mother Nature, which isn't helpful, before that I can actually make a decision to remain calm and to feel those emotions but not respond or lean into them. Yeah, and meditation just kind of is the tool to do that. It just the mindfulness to be able to actually feel yourself become emotional and grow angry. Being there cognitively or mentally for that, you can observe it and then choose how you want to respond to it. And so the more I practice meditation, the more I find in those really frustrating moments, I'm able to actually retain a sense of calm. And then I don't get angry. And then if I don't get angry, I can't stay angry. And if I'm not staying angry, instead of it being 2 hours of being really pissed off that I'm soaking wet, I can find 2 hours of calm. It's not that the physical stimulus disappears. It's still the same, but my response emotionally and mentally is different, and it's a lot better for me. And so I really do make it. I'm not great at meditation, frankly, but as I go, can you hear me, Juju?
Go ahead.
Do you know where you lost me? Do you want me to repeat?
Just a few seconds.
Just for a second. Ooh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. So, yeah, no, we just lost you for a few seconds.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm not great at meditation, personally. It's a habit that comes and goes, but it is something when I'm looking towards beginning a trail a few months out, it's a habit that I try to ramp up because I want to be in really strong mental shape going into a trail. Kind of wraps up my physical my mental, kind of how I try to do some mental training.
Good. And you've mentioned it, like how do you get ready for the food? Like, because like so many people don't think about that, but and some through hikers are ignoring that aspect of the preparation. Is how do you get your body ready for the through hike? You know what I mean? In terms of food.
So I think of this big kind of like I don't know, like Gantt chart of preparation, or maybe a better visualization would be almost like a decision tree of all the things that need to get done in preparation for a trail, and food is one of them. I try to, and if I can, I don't know, I'm going to try and explain this, but if I think, okay, this is a trail that I want to hike, the first thing that I do is just try and get acclimated with the trail. Some casual preparation is just like watching YouTube videos about that trail, looking up the association for the Pacific Crest Trail, the PCTA, the Pacific Crest Trail Association, doing some general research, looking at credible hikers who are really experienced, kind of their thoughts on the trail. And that's kind of like phase one of preparation. And then phase two, I really try and dive into the specifics of the different elements that I'm going to be facing, so usually that's like the temperatures, the sun exposure, the precipitation, the elevation, the trail tread, like how good is the quality of the trail. I try and get calibration on all of those things. A lot of that's looking at historical norms from like government websites about like long-term weather forecasts and averages. And then once I've got that figured out, then I try and begin to build a resupply strategy. You're familiar with how that goes, but that's looking at what are all the different towns along the trail? What are the services that those towns provide? What do they look like? How far are they from the trail? How comprehensive are they? And then I try and make a decision if I need to buy food in that town, or if I need to prep a box to send to that town to pick up in advance. And so I think some of the stuff we were talking about before was trying to figure out what food you should prep in your resupply boxes, and trying how to make sure you don't get super tired of your food. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because like, you know, some people like I've seen through hikers like going to the Costco like the months before the through hike and buying like, I don't know, 200 Clif bars, the same taste, same flavor, right? So that was like peanut butter, whatever. And I was kind of, you know, dude, like, come on, like in 4 months time, you know, like just the word peanut butter, like you're going to just vomit, right? You're going to just like, I don't know, like, come on. So that's sometimes a common mistake. And I found myself, I know I like coconut and macadamia, for instance, right? But after a month and a half, 6 weeks on the PCT, I couldn't just smell that flavor, right? So yeah. I was more related to how do you, you know, like what is your approach for food? Like do you train a certain way, and what is your technique, right?
Yeah, so I think the first thing there is I try and triangulate on how many calories I need every day.
Okay.
And that knowledge really comes with spending time on trail and knowing how many miles you're going to put in a day and your own metabolism. And so I figured out that I typically need somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day, depending on like how many miles I'm doing and temperature and stuff like that. But I usually it's like, okay, I need about 4,000 calories. So then I know I need to fill up 4,000 calories, and I build spreadsheets and begin to kind of cut and paste and place in the type of the foods that I want to eat. And usually I don't have a lot of meals on trail. I go stoveless, and so a lot of my food is more snacking. But usually I try and have about 12 small meals, in quotation fingers, or snacks, which might be like one or two bars or a bag of chips or some candy or something like that. And then I actually just go and test food. And something I did in preparation for this coming summer was I actually went to a local like outdoor shop and bought something between 60 and 70 different bars that they sell. And over the course of like 2 weeks, I built a spreadsheet, and every single bar I like entered into this spreadsheet their caloric value. So like how many calories they have, how many calories per ounce. And then like protein, and then like macronutrients. And then I ranked each bar on a scale of 1 to 5 for flavor. So like 5 being absolutely out of this world, love this bar, you know, it's one of kind of the like top 5% of bars. And then 4 was like good enough to include in my resupply strategy. 3 was mediocre, you know, 2 was bleh, and 1 was like terrible. And so I literally over every day just for lunch would have like 3 bars and try those 3 bars out and rank them. And then I found, hey, there were like 8 or 9 bars that I really, really liked. And they're like all out there. Some of them are like the dry fruit bars. Some of them are more Clif granola e bars. Some of them are like macro, what are the meal, meal pro bars, I forget.
Yeah,
like a whole wide range. And then bars usually constitute like about a quarter of my food. But I do the same thing with snacks. So something that I love is like Snyder's pretzels with honey mustard. Like I just could eat them forever. So I buy a, like, but I try a lot of junk food because I just really eat junk food on trail, but try a lot of them out. And then what are the ones that like actually stop me in my tracks if I'm like eating them subconsciously and like, wow, this is really delicious. Then that's a thing that I try and pack. And then for variety's sake, I usually try and have 3 different days of food. So like basically 3 full menus of food and then rotate those days in 3. So, you know, have day A, B, and C, and then repeat A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C. And that's like generally how I try to do it. So I'll have like 3 different dinners that I prep. I cold soak. So I'll have like 3 different cold soak dinners and then snacks that don't repeat every single day. It's close to every single day, but not every single day. And that's kind of like a general food strategy. And then it just all needs to tally up to somewhere around 4,000 calories a day. And I try to make sure that I'm getting around averaging between 110 to 100 calories an ounce to try and make sure that my food's really dialed in and worth its weight.
Okay, cool. So the whole preparation starts way before just the through hike itself, right? So you have to be ready. You have to be ready for, you have to taste that thing because you tried that thing like what? Q1 of 2020, and you are about to leave this summer, right? So you are testing these kind of things, you know, like 6 months in advance, right? Sometimes.
Yeah, 6 months might be a little bit of a like
maybe that's 4 months.
Extra buffer. I also just enjoy the act of like all the logistics. It's like I enjoy that.
Okay.
And then when it's you know when it's like processed food is never going to go bad. So there's no urgency or there's no reason to wait too long, and I just enjoy the whole process. And then usually I try to bulk order all these foods, and bulk ordering things you have to do online, and then a lot of times the shipping takes a while, and so I just try to leave a lot of buffer time in preparation.
Okay, good. All right, so that covers I think the training aspect and the how do you train, how do you prepare yourself for these kind of things. I think the next topic is going to be, what do you prefer about hiking? You know, yourself in such a challenge like through hiking, what do you like the most about hiking and going for, I mean, I would say long distance hiking. I don't know. What do you call long distance hiking? Like a couple of days, weeks? I don't know.
That's a great question. I say long distance is probably anything over 100, and then like ultra long distance would be anything over like 1,000. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just shooting from the hip. But
yeah,
someone who, you know, if you get in the through hiking world, you start thinking that 100 miles isn't impressive. But 100 miles is like, that's like a long hike. And a lot of people who I know who backpack still never do a 100 mile trek. So my hat's off to people who still hit triple digits. It's not. It's definitely an achievement. So,
yeah. Hello.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. So what do you like the most about like hiking? Oh. Like, so what do you like going? Like, loneliness. I don't know the nature. Like, tell us.
I absolutely love the solitude. It's great to just be alone and to be in the quiet and to be in nature, right? That's like a beautiful thing. But I also love the sense of self-sufficiency in that, and like the sense of being able to conduct yourself, to like live your life, to accomplish some significant end by yourself with the things on your back. There's something about the self-sufficiency that's really attractive. And I've something that's just kind of poetic in my mind. But then, like, the sense of adventure and accomplishing something epic, especially with, like, super long distance backpacking, like, it's just wild to walk the length of the United States. That's just super cool. And I think when I look back on my life and say, hey, what are some of the really cool things I did, or some of the things that I did that I think are inspiring? Like, that's definitely a thing to achieve, or to accomplish something that grand is really cool. And when I'm out there, it makes me feel like I'm doing the things that I want with this one life that I have. And so, yeah, and I've just always been a kind of an outdoorsy person. So all of ultra long distance backpacking really just builds on a natural love of nature. But I really do get a sense of doing something really, really epic and living kind of an inspired life. And I think that we only get one shot to live this life. And so doing things like this really makes me feel like I'm making the most of that one opportunity, and it really excites me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, if I can add something, like, for me, I think I had the chance to be who I am, like, me, myself. And because I think I would put hell quote on that thing, but in my normal life back in town, I have to adapt myself to some situations, you know, for work, for friends, for, you know, families and stuff like that. And when I am on trail, I can finally be, you know, the guy I like to be and like who I am, and just by myself. And I can just handle myself, and I can just be, you know, just going back to the, how do you say that thing? Just to the basic stuff in your life, just, you know, walking, waking up. I mean, I mean, the light is the sun, right? It's coming from the sun. You have no electrical power, nothing, right? I mean, you have your headlamp, right? But I mean, you're just using that thing like, what, 10, 15 minutes a day or something like that. But you wake up, you know, because of the sun rise, and then you go for the sunset. You can adapt yourself to the mother of nature, and that's really cool. I don't know, I like it, because you go back for hiking, eating, sleeping, and these kind of things, right? Just the basic stuff.
Yeah, and the simplicity is intoxicating almost.
Yes.
It really is.
Exactly.
And the rhythm of that. It is methodical, and it is just completely absorbing.
True. Yeah, this is the part I like the most about hiking. And and I think I can reach that level only when I go for a certain time, right? I love going for a couple of days, but when I go for a week or a little bit more than a week, and then I can finally, like, okay, wow, okay, I'm back in the process of waking up and just, I don't know, day by day, and I don't know, I just like it. So
And through hiking is definitely different in that respect, in that kind of, for the foreseeable future, you're just doing this. So there aren't a lot of future anxieties. Like, if you go out for a few days, then you still on your mind have, okay, what's on my calendar when I get back? How is my life coming together when I get back after this long weekend or after this week? Whereas with through hiking, it's much more that the future is way further out there. And for a lot of the backpackers, we don't do a great job of planning what comes post trail. but it's just so far away. Those anxieties are, you know, kind of pushed further to the back of the mind or forgotten entirely. So you can actually drop into this rhythm without reservation.
Yeah. So definitely, I think we share a lot of things in common, but that's the thing I like the most, going back to the basic things. And that's pretty cool. What kind of tips, advice would you give to people who are kind of novice, or they want to put themselves into the through hike? A few tips from you, like things they need to consider, key things that they need to consider.
Awesome. Yeah. I think the first thing that I would recommend is only get advice from, like, credible, experienced long distance backpackers. When I go online, there's just everyone and their mother are recommending how you backpack and the gear you should backpack with and when you should start and everything about backpacking. And I've really always restricted my advice to only like a handful of like highly experienced backpackers. I mean, we're talking 5,000, 10,000, 15, 30,000 plus miles under their belt. Because there's just so much kind of static on the internet now. So I really try to stay away from things like Facebook groups and Reddit and really go to intentional blogs. So one person I'll call out specifically is Andrew Skirka, who's kind of one of the godfathers of like modern long distance backpacking. He pioneered the Great Western Loop. He's done like a 6,000 mile loop in Alaska and the Yukon Territory. He's just the absolute man, and his blog, everything he has to say, I almost take as gold. And one like planning resource that I'd recommend to anyone looking to get into long distance backpacking is his book, which is The Ultimate Hiker's Gear Guide, which talks a lot about kind of the methodology by which he buys gear or selects what gear to use, which is a lot more helpful than specific gear recommendations, which he does give some of those, but he talks about what kind of gear you should be looking for and why and in what conditions. And he talks about a lot of other essential skills for someone who wants to become a backpacker. So that book, Andrew Skirka's The Ultimate Hiker's Gear Guide, I think he has a second one. The second edition is, to me, like ground zero for thoughtful through hiking preparation. And he talks about a lot of other stuff, like how to look up long-term temperature and precipitation averages, how he searches for a campsite, how he plans, how he like rotates his socks, all sorts of really useful tidbits. So that would be like my very first. And if I have to give any one piece of advice, that would be my first piece. My first piece of advice. Beyond that, I would say like just that weight is always worse than you think it is. Like a pound is a lot more than what you think it is when you have to carry it 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 miles. being really methodical about your gear and taking a real approach to discipline in your, like I call it pack discipline, but really being pack discipline, really not letting those ounces turn into extra pounds, turn into all that extra weight on your back. I'm just a huge fan of being really methodical and intentional and almost testing the limits of how Spartan you can be. And this was something that I did when I first got into backpacking. I just kind of like bought all of the, like, I would say the hardcore gear. Like I would bought the frameless backpacks and the flat tarp and went stoveless, and I kind of just dove into the deep end and set my expectations there, and then was able to dial it back as much as I wanted. I went straight from like a traditional like a 16-18 base weight loadout all the way to like a 7-8 pound base weight in just one single jump, and then chose to dial it back as I wanted. But I think that's a lot cheaper than buying iteratively, going from like 16-18 pounds down to like 12 pounds down to, you know, 6 or 7 pounds. I just, for someone who's willing to be uncomfortable a little bit, jumping straight to the extremes of the UL spectrum and then just kind of resetting your expectations is a great way to drop your base weight and not spend thousands of dollars iterating your pack over years. So that's a little bit extreme and a little bit off color, probably from what a lot of other people would advise, but I did it and it worked really, really well for me.
Okay, good. Wow. So that brings me to the, like, have you seen any or noticed any, like, I would say, like, common mistakes, you know, on the trail, or you did some mistakes and you would do it a different way? That kind of going end to end with the previous question, but you know, like I did a bunch of podcasts about, you know, like some people, like they never done any through hike, they haven't considered the, you know, like when you go to a town and what we call the vortex, right, and these kind of things, right? Some people, they do not consider the budget, right, of, you know, how much it's gonna cost the entire through hike. Some people, they do not take care of their body when they are on the hike, or they do not stretch, or these kind of things. Do you have any opinion on that things? Or
totally.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you share?
The two biggest things I see is, first, hikers not doing enough shakedown hikes, where they're not getting out and they're not testing their gear and they're not learning in a low-risk environment to take those lessons learned, re-optimize their gear or their fitness or whatever they need to tweak before getting on trail. Like, a lot of people just going, looking for, Googling, you know, most recommended backpack, buying that backpack and getting on trail with that backpack. Like, to me, that's a losing strategy. So not going out and testing your gear, not being proficient with your gear. You know, people who come out to the trail and have pitched their tent three times. That's a mistake. And then the second thing is not knowing the conditions that they should be expecting well enough. I think it's really easy with so much advice on the internet to just be like, hey, I know that it's going to be hot in this section of the trail, or I know there's going to be snow, or I know that it might get rainy. And to me, that's a really, really imprecise level of knowledge, and one that you can't, that it's harder to plan for that. Whereas if you know that the temperature is going to be 90 degrees, it's not just going to be hot, it's going to be an average of 87 degrees is the high in the day, in the highest, and then at night the low is going to be 53. That to me is something that you can actually plan for and prep for, and you can try out different sleeping pad setups, with knowing that you should be expecting somewhere in the 50s to be the temperature that you're sleeping at night. To me, that's much more valuable. Or knowing that there's going to be 4 inches of rain on average per month in Washington in September is a lot more valuable than the internet telling me, hey, there's a lot of rain. So I generally find that hikers aren't precise enough in what they're in their like research prep, and then it rolls over into the gear they select and the skills that they choose to learn. So those are like two things I would recommend people spend more time figuring out the conditions that they need to be prepared for. So, and then actually going out in those conditions pre-hike and living through them to figure out what they need to do to be ready for their, whatever their really long distance hike would be. Like, those are some things. I think other things is like relying on others as trails get really crowded. It's easy to rely on other people's knowledge, their skills, to get you through. And I think that's just a huge liability. Like, if you're going out on the Pacific Crest Trail southbound and you don't know how to use an ice axe, if you're getting an early start, like, you shouldn't count on there someone being out there to teach you how to use an ice axe. Like, you should know how to do that, or know how to teach yourself. Would just be a quick example.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, because that's something I experienced myself, is like, I never thought of, you know, like, facing an issue, like, I was not ready for the food or whatever like that, or for the rain, for instance, you know. But, like, I trained myself, like, tried to go in Canada and Quebec, like, just to go for a couple of days in September, October, when we get a lot of rain. But I didn't feel the same thing on the PCT when I was after 2 months of hiking, because I was not the same guy after 2 months. And I had to go through so many things, you know, for the first 2 months, a lot of emotions and stuff like that. And, you know, like, so that's a good thing, right? And it's what you're saying is, like, we have to get ready. And so many people, like, they just put themselves right away in the through hike. And, you know, like, I mean, if people are listening to the podcast, and they have to consider and going slowly, step by step, and trying to, the conclusion is, like, I think is, like, it comes with the experience, right? And you have to train yourself. You have to go for small hikes first, and then you're going to face some of the issues, and you're going to see, like, wow, okay, going, like you say, like, on the rain with nonstop 3 days, that's really tough. That's very demanding, right, mentally. So, that's a very good recommendations and very good tips. So I think that covers a little bit about common mistakes, you know, like, and also, like, I took a note of, you know, like, that was, hiking sounds a lot of fun when I talk to my friends and I'm just, like, you know, having drinks. And there's a guy, I don't know, he talks about hiking. And one of my friends said, hey, well, there's Juju, right? Talk to this guy. he's done the PCT, and maybe he can give you like his, you know, feeling about that thing. And like the feedback is like, wow, you know, that sounds a lot of fun, the PCT and these kind of things, right? And AT or whatever you want. But, you know, like you have to consider like so many things ahead, you know, like before the hike and also during the hike, right? So I think you gave us like quite a lot of recommendations and like mistakes like you've seen or maybe you've experienced yourself, right? So that's a very good example. So thank you. So next topics I want to cover with you is what is the piece of gear like in your backpack you will never trade away? I don't know, like something you really like and or something you want to improve or something you want to, I don't know, change the way you're doing right now. I don't know. Tell us.
Cool. Yeah, I have a few things that range in like size, and I'll start with the one that's maybe the most oddball, and that's I'm a huge fan of cuticle scissors, which for those who don't know, they're just like a really small set of scissors that are usually for like nail clipping, more like beauty things. You can find them at any Walgreens or CVS. But I actually don't carry a knife with me on trail and carry cuticle scissors instead because they do everything a small knife would do for me. They can open packages, they can cut guy line, like anything I need, but they also can cut my nails. So I don't need like a knife and nail clippers or a combined one. So I'm a really big fan of cuticle scissors, which I think is maybe a little bit not normal. I would encourage anyone who's I think my pair weigh only like 0.8 of an ounce or something. They're pretty light, and I don't need a knife.
Wow, that's a good advice. Like that's even though I think I'm going to make quite a few podcasts with, you know, a few friends, I think you're going to be the only one mentioning that thing. So, all right, thank you. That's a top one from Reddish, guys. So you can hear like these guys very – we don't have the same priority, right?
Oh, my other one that will probably be unnormal is my nose gets runny a lot in the mornings when I'm cold. So I carry half a handkerchief with me. I cut it in half. And I keep it in the pockets of my running shorts that I wear just to help me blow my nose. Then I wash it out sometimes in like a creek or whatever. But that helps me from having a runny nose all the time. So that's another take. And another thing of like getting out there and realizing, hey, for like 4 mornings in a row, I've been cold. And when I'm cold, I have a runny nose. And if it's runny long enough and I'm sniffling long enough, I get a headache. Like, how do I alleviate that? And so that was born directly out of the Tahoe Rim Trail and doing this like shakedown hikes. Iterative testing, but there's another very cheap, very practical, no name brand piece of advice.
No, that's very good. And anything like more hiking related, I would say.
Yeah. So a huge thing, one like wearable like clothing piece would be my Montbel wind pants. I'm a huge fan of them. I think I have the Tachyons, which it's like they're just crazy light. They weigh less than 2 ounces, but they provide a significant amount of warmth, especially like in the mornings when you just need to take the edge off the cold. Really big fan of those. Like just the value added for the weight added is just extraordinary. So a huge fan of my Montbel wind pants. And then I have the Z-Pax Cuban Fiber flat tarp as my shelter. I'm a huge fan of flat tarps. My tarp weighs 5 ounces exactly. It weighs like 6 with guy lines, which is just crazy light and crazy compact. And I'm a big fan of cowboy camping, so I don't set it up a ton, but I just think that it's tough to beat a 5 ounce shelter. It's possible, but just having a shelter that weighs that little, especially if you're in a place where you're not expecting a ton of rain, like on the PCT, like it's just, I think, an awesome piece of gear. So huge fan of Z-Pax Cuban Fiber Tarp. That'd be my one. And then the last thing would be, I'm a big Gossamer Gear Kumo fan. The Kumo's got, which is a backpack. The Gossamer Gear Kumo is a 36 liter backpack. Well, I think it weighs around 15 ounces, the newest version. I think it has a lot of design elements that are different from the standard backpack that you see out there. Specifically, I love, it has a top pocket. It doesn't have a roll top closure. It has an over the top closure. So hard to explain, but the back, there's kind of a top flap that you can unbutton, and you have a top pocket, which is really nice for keeping some small things on the exterior of your pack during the day, which I find really nice. It's also a little bit more ergonomic. It has two shoulder strap pockets, which come included in the price, which is really awesome. And then it's got a really spacious and well-designed back pocket that you can actually reach with the backpack on. So Gossamer Gear has my probably long-term allegiance to the Kumo, pending any epic other backpacks hitting the market. But big fan of the Kumo. I took that with me on the PCT, and then I'm going to be taking it again with me this year in 2020.
Okay, good. And something I got really impressed about you is what, how many pair of shoes did you get on the PCT?
Dude, I think I only used 3 pairs of shoes.
That's why I want to cover this topic with you, because, man, like, you are insane. And I want to tell people who are not into thru-hike that I would say, like, 95, 99% of the thru-hikers on the PCT are going through 4 pair of shoes, right? Some, yeah, 5 least. Sometimes.
Yeah.
At least, right?
5 to 6 is probably the
and
average.
I have a picture of the 4 pair of shoes I went through, and they are all just gone, like, just dead. And, like, how did you do the same trail, the same hike as I did with 3 pair of shoes? Like, can you explain us, like,
yeah,
how do you take care of your feet? And, like, I don't know, like, how do you do it? Like, how did you do it?
Yeah. So I wear the Ultra Lone Peaks, which, like, lots of people do, which is like a medium build trail running shoe. And I wear, what do I wear? I wear in Gingy trail weight toe socks. And that's kind of like my foot situation. I carry 2 pairs of socks and I rotate them every day. And typically what I'll do, if it's cold enough that I want to wear socks, I'll put on the next before I go to bed so that I don't have to put them on the morning of, so my feet can stay, like, a little bit warm. And then I just try and wash the pair of socks that I'm not wearing sometime in the morning so that they have the day to dry and I can put them on that, like, at night when I get to camp. And that's really it. I don't spend a ton of time worrying about my feet. My very first trail, the Ouachita Trail, my feet were a disaster. I mean, like, blisters on blisters, like, just pounding ibuprofen because I was in such terrible pain. And I learned a lot from that. And again, this is like one of those things where I didn't iterate on the front of that long trail and it got my butt kicked. But then before the PT, I spent a lot of time thinking about what went wrong on the Ouachita Trail and trying to make sure that my foot system was dialed in. And in terms of, like, the shoes getting that beat up, it was really a lack of planning, I think, like, or just not caring that much. I don't know. I just, like, got used to the shoes being worn out and I was, like, fine with it. And I went into the Sierras with, like, I went into the trail with a new set of shoes, and then I bought a pair in, like, Bend, Oregon. And then I hiked all the way from Bend, I hiked somewhere, like, I forget where in the desert. It was, like, just south of Tehachapi. It's, like, Casa de Luna or somewhere like that, where I actually got my last pair. So they only did, like, 500 miles. So, yeah, I walked into the Sierras with shoes that already had, like, 700 miles on them. But it's just kind of like they're beat up and my feet will be a little bit sore, but it's just the name of the game. So I don't know. It's just rolling with the punches and not freaking out about stuff and
I don't know. No, it kind of blows my mind too. I can't recommend it as advice to only hike with three pairs of shoes.
No,
but
never,
I did it.
Never. I mean, I think now you're talking about that thing. I think that was in the hiker town. Like, God, what was that town? We were in the, oh my God, with the Trail Angels. And we slept at the same place. We sold team, myself, and you got the new pearl that was sent to this.
At Hiker Heaven.
Hiker Heaven, yeah. True.
That's where I had them shipped. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. No, so I think it was like 550 miles left when I got my third pair. So they like still had life in them at the end of it.
Yeah, but the question was more about the second pair, right? Like from Oregon all the way to the Hiker Heaven. Like
that
was just
noxious.
That was just like, how many miles is that? Like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So guys, if you're listening to the podcast, guys, do not do this. This guy is just crazy. And, you know, like what he said about meditation and stuff like that, like clearly he doesn't care about his feet, right? So.
Right, but that like gives you the mental space to make up for your lack of physical. You're like, all right, my feet are gonna hurt a little bit, or you know, I just can't step on any really sharp rocks or anything. But yeah, not advice.
God. No, not advice. Okay, cool. All right, so I think we are just getting close to the end of the podcast. I just maybe briefly, you can just tell us, like, I think you did it. In the introduction, but maybe you can tell us again, like, what you're going to do next, and maybe, you know, like very long term, maybe for the next few years, like if you have a trail like you have on the list you want to do, and that's something you want to achieve, maybe that would be good.
So this year I've got the Pacific Northwest Trail and the Great Divide Trail I'm hoping to do, and then right after those do the Sierra High Route and the South Sierra High Route, which is like an 80-mile extension, which is mostly off-trail stuff. And then combine that with the lowest to highest, which goes from Death Valley to Mount Whitney, the lowest point in the U.S. to the highest point. That would be a combined like 400-ish miles, I think, maybe a little bit more. But ultimately, long-term, I think I kind of have my eyes on the CDT for 2021. But long term, I'd actually like to start doing more off trail stuff, building my own routes and not being restricted to like seeing the parts of the wilderness that are on trail. Just want to continue to like expand my sense of adventure and agency and do some off trail stuff. So I think if I'm hiking in 2022, I definitely would like to not beyond trail. There are some trails I definitely want to knock off, but I want to spend some time working on some pre-made routes. Like Andrew Skirka has a lot of routes that he's made that are off trail that he like recommends, and there's some data around do those to build up my route finding, my navigational skills, and then eventually begin building my own routes and hiking those. It's kind of like long term where I'd like to see my backpacking kind of experience lead me to. So not always necessarily pushing bigger and bigger miles, not trying to hike 4,000 miles, 5,000 mile trails, but instead trying to find like the really epic, beautiful, different parts of our continent and other continents, and then building routes around that and exploring those. So that's kind of what I'd like to do long term.
All right, cool. That's very good. So I'm sure people like loved listening to you today, Relish. So maybe you can share with us your Instagram account and these kind of things if people are very interested to follow you on the journey and these kind of things, right? Can you tell us your social networks?
Yeah. You can find me at relishhikes.com. Relish spelled R-E-L-I-S-H. Relishhikes.com. And then my Instagram, my YouTube. Those are all also Relish Hikes, so you can find me there and hit me up.
All right, cool. Well, again, man, like, thank you so much for being here today, and I'm very happy. I was very excited to have you on the podcast, and that was really important to me. So I'm very glad you're the second one, and I don't know if you had the experience, maybe.
Yeah, this was an absolutely incredible time. Thanks so much for the invite, and I really enjoyed this.
Cool. Well, I hope we're going to do another one maybe at the end of the 2020, and maybe you can tell us how your hugs, what did you do for the summer 2020? Hopefully we're gonna be able to go on a hike, and
yeah,
I'm sure every backpackers are kind of just waiting at home due to this COVID-19, just going crazy. So if people are listening to this podcast in a few months time, we are recording that thing in April of 2020, so it's kind of, it's getting tough for everyone, for people who like the outdoors and going outside. Hopefully you're going to be able to go on a hike, man, this year. So yeah. I hope for you, man. So thank you again. And thanks, everyone, for listening to the podcast today. And stay tuned for the next one. I think the third guest I'm going to have is going to be Gator, actually. So hopefully this guy's going to make it. He's going to teach us, how you connect two towns with only candies and no food. So this guy is going to teach us a different approach on the food aspect of the thru hike, right?
Love it. That'll be a great one.
Yeah. So guys, stay tuned for the next one. Thanks again, Relish. And guys, stay healthy, stay safe, and talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye.